This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Hospitals Beyond Boundaries is a non-profit organization dedicated towards the improvement of health of vulnerable and marginalized communities through sustainable health efforts. The founder and CEO of Hospitals Beyond Boundaries was recently recognized for contributions towards the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals Initiative and was also named a UN Young Leader for Sustainable Development Goals 2016. Here to tell us more about himself and his extraordinary organization is UN Young Leader and founder and CEO of Hospitals Beyond Boundaries, Dr. Muhammad Lutfi Adel Luqman. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Hailin. Thank you.
So congratulations, firstly, on making history with the UN Young Leader's appointment. How did that feel?
Well, it feels great, but it also feels like a very great responsibility as well on my shoulders. But yeah, I'm taking it positively, and it's been very good so far.
So when we say UN Young Leader, what does it mean to actually be one? What are the responsibilities that fall within that?
Okay, so I am selected as one of the UN Young Leader for Sustainable Development Goals. So for those who don't know, SDGs, or Sustainable Development Goals, are 17 goals that are propagated by the United Nations, but it was discussed and decided during the UN General Assembly by world leaders. So there are 17 goals ranging from like ending poverty to ending hunger, healthcare and well-being, more equitable society. So these are the goals that the United Nations want to promote, not just at the policy level, but until the grassroots level. And it's good that now they think that they must get the youth involved in these goals, because there's a timeline for this goal. It's until 2030. And during at 2030, the youth will be the leaders at the time. So basically, we are involved in advocacy. It's more of an advocacy role for 1 year. For the whole 1 year, we are enabled of the networks within the UN society. We are going to give talks, giving promotions, and being involved with the governments, NGOs and the private sector in promoting the SDGs.
And from what I understand, you did some time with the WHO. Mm-hmm. What were you doing with them? And did it influence you when you were thinking about setting out to do your own thing?
Yes, it did partly. But my interest into community work and volunteering actually goes back when I was a medical student. I was studying in Indonesia for 3 years. Then I continued my study in Malaysia for another 3 years. It's a training program. So even there, I was very interested in the field of medicine called community health. Or in Malaysia, it's more popularly known as public health. So it deals with, instead of treating a single patient at a time, I'm more interested in treating the whole community, and goes upwards until the national and also the global level. So I caught my interest there because it's the first time that I get to live among the poor people. All this while I've been living in KL, always been a KL boy. So being in Indonesia, in Bandung, is a very eye-opening experience for me. And so I went to one of these conferences that my university organized. So that's where I discovered this UN body such as the WHO, which does policies on health and how it affects the health of the whole nation. So that's when I kind of decided that, you know, I'm going to take this as a doctor. I'm not going to take the more popular path, like being a cardiologist or oncologist or those kind of thing, but I will settle down with this thing because for me it's much more interesting. So that's when I finished my studies in 2013 and I straight applied for the internship job at the United Nations under the World Health Organization. So yes, it partly inspired me to start my own NGO, but my NGO actually started before my internship.
And from what I understand, it was also during your hospitalization after an accident that you thought, okay, it's really time to to take this to the ground. Could you tell us more about that experience?
Yes. Yeah, so as I told you before, even during my medical school, I was very interested in this field called public health. So I wanted to start my own NGO that focuses on that, you know, because you see so many NGOs, especially around Southeast Asia, focuses on humanitarian aid and all the charity work, which is also very, very important, especially if there's a war, if there's a flood or natural disaster. But I don't see many NGOs that are working in the development sector. Development means that you're there for the long run. You're there to build facilities. Even 10 years after the war, 10 years after the flood, you'll still be there to empower the community so that this community can help themselves. But it was an accident in 2012 that really made me think that maybe I should just start now. At first, I thought that maybe I should be a specialist first, you know, get more experience. But the accident really taught me that life can really be really short and God can take away your abilities in just a minute, right? So after I regained my ability to walk normally again and I can begin to hear better, so that's when I said to myself and I told my closest friends that, you know, let's start this NGO that I've been dreaming of all this while.
In creating Hospitals Beyond Boundaries, were you thinking about addressing the UN Sustainable Development Goals, or did it just happen to coincide?
Actually, when we started HBB, the SDG wasn't there yet. There was only the MDGs. The MDGs focus on five specific goals. And to be honest, yes, actually, when we started, we didn't have that idea in mind. But I guess when you're working in this sector, everything will converge, you know, because we are all towards the same goals. So once we're doing this for a while, then we realize, oh, we've been achieving these goals without us realizing it. So I guess that's when one day the UN contacted us and tell us that we were shortlisted among the top 30 that was shortlisted to become the young leaders. So that's when we were quite surprised and took this more seriously.
Before we go on to hone in on the work that you've been doing, the HBB website refers to itself as a social health enterprise. Could you tell us more about that term? I mean, here on BFM, we've of course talked about social enterprises. We talk about enterprises in general.
Yes.
When we insert that word health in it, what does that mean?
So that's the most important difference between us and other healthcare NGOs, because we are not a charity, but we are a social enterprise. As I told you before, there's already a lot of NGOs that are working on humanitarian aid, and I'm also interested in those, but there's already other bigger organizations. I might as well just join them. So we decided to be different by focusing on something that is sustainable, which is social enterprise. So the community that we are helping are mostly the community that are most inequitable. For example, our first project is in Cambodia. We're helping the minority people at the outskirts of Phnom Penh, where the society is highly inequitable. The rich people, they live side by side with the poor, but they are from the same community and they do want to help each other. And sometimes they do help each other, but there's no permanent institution, you know, to institutionalize this. So, our concept is very simple, right? We want to help those who could not afford healthcare. Usually, in other countries, how you afford healthcare is by getting these people into like a community insurance program or public funding by the government. But this just doesn't happen in Cambodia because the government is quite poor, that it heavily depends on foreign donations and heavily depends on the patient's out-of-pocket money. The total health expenditure in Cambodia, 60% of the people in Cambodia have to pay on their own, like the private hospital here. So the concept of social insurance in Cambodia is, I can say, basically zero. They have no idea of that. So we started off with a simple model of cross-subsidization, where the rich and those who could afford will come to our clinic and hospital and pay the normal fees, the same fees are a bit lower than those charged in other clinics. But then the profit from all this will be used to plow back to fully subsidize the poor and build new facilities. And many people are skeptical on how this model can work, because if you're rich, might as well you go to a big and comfortable hospital, whereas our clinic is just a small one. But the key is community empowerment. When we hire the doctors and the nurses and the community health workers from their own community, and we give them a good salary, and these people go house to house to treat patients and bring the patient to the hospital if needs to be referred, then people see the community empowerment in that. They see that their own people are being helped, so they would prefer to come to our clinic and pay for the healthcare, because they know that when they pay, they're also changing their own community. So that's why they keep coming.
What was it that made you want to work with the CHAM community in Cambodia?
It's actually, I can say it's a coincidence, because one of the CHAM community members come to Malaysia to build a school, actually. And she came to my family, and it was a fundraiser. So we were quite interested in this community. We've never heard of this community before. So then we went to Cambodia to see the school. But then my family are mostly from medical background. My father is also a doctor. My mother is a pharmacist. And my siblings are all in the medical field. So we see that we can help through funding, but what if we also contribute through the knowledge that we have and the energy that we have? So I can say it's a coincidence because of that guy who came to Malaysia and we decided to help.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Muhammad Lutfi Adil bin Lukman. He's the founder and CEO of Hospitals Beyond Boundaries, or HBB. It's their work that we're discussing today. If you've got any questions, maybe about how you could get involved or about what it's like, I guess, working in these sorts of communities, do give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. My guest today is was recently named a UN Young Leader for Sustainable Development Goals 2016. He's also the founder and CEO of Hospitals Beyond Boundaries, Dr. Muhammad Lutfi Adil Lukman. And we're talking today about the work that he's been doing. So considering the pilot project for HBB is based in Cambodia, for the reasons you mentioned earlier, are you also considering Malaysia? I mean, I'm sure you get asked this a lot.
Yes, and we've actually already started just quite recently. Yeah, the reason that we started in Cambodia also is because in Malaysia, the healthcare is actually quite good, right? And the regulations are quite strong. So as a medical student, in which I started HBB when I was a fourth-year medical student, it's impossible for me to start a clinic. You know, no medical student starts their own clinic in Malaysia because you need at least 8 years of experience. But in Cambodia, you can register clinic as an NGO. So it was registered under HBB, so it's possible to open a clinic. But then our idea is to create HBB Cambodia as a pilot project, right, to prove that we can do it and then bring it elsewhere, especially back to Malaysia. So after 4 years, we have managed to prove ourselves and got the recognition from around the world. And now it's time for us to return back to Malaysia. But as in Cambodia, we plan to start small. Even in Cambodia, we just started with health screenings and mobile clinics. So in Malaysia, it's just last 2 weeks that we started a monthly clinic for the homeless in Kuala Lumpur, in Medan Tuan Ku. And we are working together with an NGO called Need to Feed the Need, where they give food to the homeless, and while these people are getting their food, we are opening a clinic next to it so anybody with illnesses can come to our clinic and get their treatments. And although it's called a clinic for the homeless, but the patients that we're seeing are more than that. There's always the poor ones, the refugees, the migrants, the ones who would have to pay even if they go to the government clinic. So, like, we are the only clinics. There are other clinics that are doing the same thing. But the NGO clinics are the ones who are giving hope to them. Without us, then they will have nowhere to go for their health illness.
What are some of the key illnesses, or maybe to ask it in another way, what are the services that really need to be provided to these communities in Cambodia, and do they differ from what we would see in the rural community here in Malaysia?
The community that we're serving in Cambodia right now, their most prevalent problem is on maternity health. Because Cambodia has a very dark history 30 years ago where most of the hospitals were destroyed by the Khmer Rouge. And access to healthcare now is quite scarce. And even if there are hospitals, these hospitals are built mostly by foreigners who know little about their own culture, about the culture of the Cambodians. And what so if it's a minority, that they are even worse off, right? So many people would not go to the hospital, but instead attended by traditional healers, opting for home birth, and those kind of things. So our focus in Cambodia is on maternity and child health, where we follow up mothers and allow them to deliver safely for those who have never ever been to a hospital before. And I think it's quite similar to Malaysia, especially in the rural areas in Kelantan, Sabah and Sarawak. We are still seeing those kind of people, and I guess they will need help as well. And I hope that one day we can expand to those areas too.
If you've got any questions for Dr. Lutfi on the work that Hospitals Beyond Boundaries or HBB is doing, do give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So what would you say the experience of HBB in Cambodia has been so far?
Sorry?
How would you say your experience has been so far with working with HBB, and have you achieved some of the goals that you initially set out with?
It has been an amazing experience, yeah, the ups and downs. But I can say I learned a lot of things that I would never learn in books or at medical school, or even if I just stayed in Malaysia. When I say ups and downs, the ups are like the ones that we're having now, having the international recognition. But behind those stories, there are always the bad stories where sometimes we think that this model wouldn't work and we almost went bankrupt. And then, but one interesting thing I discovered that when you're doing this kind of work, there's always people who will come to help you, even at the last minute, you know. Last time we almost went bankrupt. We only have like 2 months of funds to sustain. But then suddenly an angel investor came and invited us to like the Middle East, and we fundraised there and we got a lot of funds to continue what we're doing. So yeah, I can say it's a roller coaster ride.
How much of a struggle has funding been? I mean, hearing you talk about it, is it kind of living on the edge, or
yes,
do you have a more steady supply?
It is like walking on the edge. Like the first time that we tried to fundraise, we were not backed up by a big foundation, and we didn't have any government grants. Until today, most of our funders are individuals. So when we started, we don't have anything in our pockets. So we wanted to open a booth at one of the conferences. So we talked to the organizers whether we can open a booth for free because we are a charity and hopefully they can help us. Well, they said, okay, you can open a booth, but it's in between two other booths. So we didn't have any table, we didn't have any chairs, we sat on the floor. But that's our first donation box. And at the first time, we got around 300 ringgit, which is not bad. And from there, we started to do simple things like health screening, where you check the blood pressure and sugar, which is low cost. But we try to promote everything that we do. We promote Kau Kau, so that in Facebook, we promote it and all. So from there, people actually just like to see that you're doing things, you know, instead of just asking for money. So we just show them that we're doing something. And from there, we get more and more money. And after 3 years, it took us 3 years to finally get the amount of money to buy a land in Cambodia and start our very first clinic. So our clinic was started in 2015 in June.
And who are the people who are actually involved in the clinic? I mean, as you pointed out earlier, your path is quite an unusual path. You know, not many people who are studying medicine now will think, you know what I want? I don't want to make money so fast. I want to go to Cambodia and open a clinic. A lot of people will be thinking about, you know, maybe opening up their own practice, figuring out their specializations. So who are the doctors who are actually working on the ground with you?
The doctors who are working on the ground with me can divide into those in Malaysia and those in Cambodia. So those in Cambodia, they are hired staffs. They are salaried with the market wage, even higher than the market wage in Cambodia. We have two permanent doctors, one staff nurse, two midwives, one laboratory technician, and one accountant. So these are full-time workers in Cambodia, and they work just like any other general practitioners in Malaysia, right? But in Malaysia, we have a team of 13 people, and we all work on voluntary basis. So like me, I'm still working for the Ministry of Health Malaysia, and most of my friends are also still working in their own firms. So basically what we do in Malaysia is that we give consultation, we give them advice, and we go for monthly visit to audit the clinic, so those kind of things. But the groundwork will be done by those in Cambodia.
Hospitals Beyond Boundaries doesn't seek to just treat patients, but also to alleviate poverty. Mm. Why is it so important to address this issue when you're providing healthcare services?
Because poverty and health always goes hand in hand. Right? We call it the social determinants of health, and the highest determinants of health is poverty. And this is proven scientifically, in where even in London, we don't have to go to the rural places. Even in London, there's a study that shown in between two tube stops, and I don't remember, it's a station called Whitechapel and the station before it, it's just one station difference, but the life expectancy of those people living in that area and the stop before can differ 5 to 10 years. So because the area in Whitechapel more poor, those people who live there are poorer, and most of them are migrants. So poverty and health always go hand in hand. If you want to tackle health, you must tackle poverty. We always believe that what's the point of treating a patient and then send them back to the place that make them sick? For example, if people come with diarrhea, you give them medications and then you send them back and they will cook using unclean water and poor sanitation. People come with pneumonia, infection of the lungs, and you send them back to the houses that have roofs on it, the roofs that have holes on it. So it doesn't make sense. So it's a poverty cycle and health cycle goes hand in hand.
And what kind of work are you doing in this area? I mean, specifically to not just to treat patients, but to try to work towards alleviating poverty?
So firstly, it's about the employment of the community health workers. So the workers that are working with us in Cambodia, they are not from the affluent families. For example, like our community health worker, all of the family members are farmers, and the other ones, all the family members are fishermen. But these are the people who, the only person in the family who have a professional job. Right, so when we give them a monthly salary and we train them, this amount of money is even enough for them to feed their families, their siblings, and they also support their siblings to study. So it's one of the ways how we break the poverty cycle, by giving them job instead of just giving them charity at one time. Right, it's like giving a man a fish so he can eat for one day. It's not good. But if you teach them how to fish, and then they can fish for the rest of their lives.
You've mentioned also in a blog post recently, and we are all aware of this, there is a glut of medical students entering the field. And, you know, and yet there seems to be a problem of a lack of doctors on one end, too many medical students on the other. But you also said how we shouldn't scare them away from applying their knowledge to so-called second-tier medical professions. What do you mean by that?
Well, you read quite deep into my blog. It was a while ago. I'm saying that because, you know, in the future, the pathway of a doctor is not the typical ones anymore, right? Like previously, when you say a doctor, you're always imagining like cardiologist, oncologist, pediatric surgeon, those kind of things. But in the future, where there's too many doctors, these doctors will have to find the alternative pathways. And there's a lot of alternative pathways. And even like me, now I'm venturing into public health and more specifically on health economics. So I am applying the economics principle towards healthcare. Yeah? It doesn't mean that all my 6 years in a medical school is lost, right? Because I think what we do in medical school is not just to memorize things and vomit them out, but it teaches you on how you think, on the way of thinking. That's the most important thing. So no matter what you venture into, it will always be useful, right? So you can apply economics, and some doctors venture into law. And I call this the third sector in healthcare. Because you know what? Now in Malaysia, it's just between two. There's a public practice and the private practice. So the so-called those who want to contribute to the community will be in public. And at the other end is the ones who want to make profit. And there's no center way, right? So what I'm trying to promote is the center way called the social health enterprise, which means it is a business, it is an enterprise, but it is more responsible towards the community and also to train these doctors, right? Right now in the public sector, there's too many undergraduates, but there's not enough space to train them because the public facilities are not enough, right? So we need, but if you want to let them train at the private, we are concerned about their profit making, right? So I'm trying to promote a center where there is a business that is responsible for training the doctors, where we can depend on them to train, and they also follow up on the community progress, not just the patient who comes into the clinic, but also goes into the community for house visits and those kind of things. So I hope that this third sector will thrive in Malaysia.
Do you think that this new generation of doctors are ready for that? I mean, we're seeing a lot of this in terms of the quote-unquote millennials, right? Mm-hmm. And how in forging a career path, there's no longer a kind of set pathway to walk. Mm-hmm. But with doctors, you know, there still is in some ways. If you still wanted to, you could still do the regular, I start here, I become a medical officer, I go on. Do you think people are ready to try to move away from that?
Well, I think most of them have to, because now the government is implementing because of, there's too many doctors in the market and not many places for them. So recently, our Prime Minister has announced that we're creating more spaces in the public sector while providing contract service for these doctors. But after 4 years, right, the good ones will be taken into the government, but the other ones will be let go into the private sector. So you want it or not, if you're not among the good ones, the majority will go into the private sector. So you have to find your own way. Yeah? So this is where the private sector should not just take them in, but also train them to become better doctors and to have them specialize in their specific fields and not just profit-making, you know, so those kind of things.
And with your work with both the UN and, of course, with HBB, are we anywhere close to achieving the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030? I mean, that is not very far away anymore, and they're quite lofty goals.
Yes, but the SDGs is just 1 year old, so I guess there's a lot of progress to do. In certain areas, we are achieving good goals. For example, for good health and well-being, even during the MDGs, we've already achieved all the targets. So for healthcare, it's not quite a problem. But in terms of an equitable society, in terms of like governance, so those kind of things, we can be improved on. There's a lot to improve on until the year 2030.
And you're doing your part as a doctor, but for myself and for other people who don't have that MD behind their name, what can we do to contribute towards achieving these goals? I mean, in our own way.
As I said, there are 70 goals and it ranges a lot from climate change to justice to equity. So in whatever that you do, there's always a way on how to help. For example, one of the young leaders, there are 17 young leaders all around the world, and one of them is in the fashion industry. So she creates awareness on sustainable design of clothing. So no matter what field you are in, there's always one goal that you can focus on and achieve.
And what's next for HBB after Cambodia? So you're coming home.
Yes.
And how do you hope to see it grow? I mean, what kinds of services, what kinds of growth would you consider a success for HBB?
Well, for us, a success is always when we see our clinic is able to sustain itself, right? For example, in Cambodia, we have the cross-subsidy method. But in Malaysia, it's quite difficult because we don't live in the same community. I mean, the rich ones, we live in affluent area, and the homeless and the poor ones, we live in areas such as the Chowkit, where we're helping. So right now, our clinic in Medan Tuanku is still fully charity. But what I'm looking forward to is to create another clinic at an affluent area. And this will be, I see, the first social health enterprise clinic in Malaysia where it treats people in the affluent areas just like any other clinics, but the doctor's salary are capped. Right? It's higher than the government salary, but not as much as the private salary. But the thing that they can benefit from is that they can see community change, progress, and also they would still work in a team. Right? Instead of working in the private sector, usually people work in silos. You have to do everything from taking blood to diagnosis to getting the results. But this is an enterprise where you still work in team and you can still serve the community And yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Are you concerned that, you know, I can't speak for Cambodia, but here in Malaysia, I think there might be a mentality of, oh, you know, if they're serving low-income communities, then I don't necessarily want to go there. I want to go to a swankier private clinic. I want to have, you know, that kind of personalized service. Are you concerned that that mentality might get in the way of people more fully participating in the clinic?
Yeah, and that's one of the why our idea is to create two separate clinics, right? Like the ones in the affluent areas will be fully subsidizing the poor ones. And this one that is running in the affluent areas, it runs just like a normal business. You know? There's no difference between...
Like any other GP, for example.
Yes, like any GP. Right. But you have to emphasize on, for every visit, for every of your... If you're paying out of pocket, if you're using insurance... Most of that will go back to help the poor. Because now the market of GP is saturated, right? So this doctor is as good as that one. So what makes you different from others? So when someone sees that your clinic is actually contributing back to society, so you have an edge.
What would you say is the hardest thing for you about working with marginalized communities? What has been the biggest challenge?
I think the biggest challenge is because at first they are quite skeptical because a lot of people have tried to help but not are there for the long run.
Yeah.
So they would think the same thing. These people are just here, you know, to take pictures and post on Facebook and promote themselves. So it took a while for us to get their confidence.
And to earn that trust.
Yes, to earn that trust. But once you earn that trust, you never break it.
For people interested in assisting you, maybe so you don't have to live on the edge when it comes to your finances, for example, how can people get in touch?
Yeah, just visit our website, www.hbb.org.my. And there is our bank account and it's also our Facebook page. Where you have any questions, you can straight away post it there. We have a quite responsive administrator where yesterday we had more than 100 messages in a day and she responded to all of those in a short time. So, yeah, looking forward for your messages.
Thank you very much for coming in. I've been speaking today with Dr. Muhammad Lutfi Adil bin Luqman. He's the founder and CEO of Hospitals Beyond Boundaries, and it's been that work that we've been talking about today here on Health and Living. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.